Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, I think we've all been well trained to listen for that familiar guitar lick that you expected coming out of the break. But right now, listen to a little more of this. Did you hear it? Could you stand it? Well, George Prochnick, our next guest, is on a quest for more of that. He is the author of a book called In Pursuit of Silence, Listening for Meaning in a World of Noise. And he's here now to tell us what he has heard. George Prochnick, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
And listeners, we'll take a few phone calls along the way here with your suggestions for where to find peace and, most of all, quiet in the New York area. You could start calling now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And George, your quest for silence takes you from a monastery in the Great Plains to outer space. And I hate to ask you to give away the ending, but does pure silence exist anywhere within human reach?
It certainly doesn't. But there's a lovely line from Thoreau who said that silence has different depths and fertility, like soil. And I think that what we can find is all sorts of different kinds of silence. The silence of the monastery was very different than what I discovered in a Zen garden in Portland, Oregon, and very different again from silence among people meditating in Japanese.
Different how? Can you put it into words?
Sure. In the monastery, which I visited, which was in Iowa, Trappist Monastery, the monks in some way view themselves as preparing for death, praying for the world and preparing for death. And there's an enormously concentrated, very, very sober silence that permeates existence there. It's not always heavy. There can be a lightness because of their faith to where that silence is ultimately taking them. But then, for example, the other night, there is a magazine called Cabinet that organized for the launch of the book something called a silent mixer, where they had a quiet party where everyone who attended, and there were more than 125 people at one point, was forbidden from speaking. You could only communicate via scribbled notes or through sign language. And the sound throughout this event, which went on for almost 2 hours, was all of gentle laughter at different points throughout the room. And I spoke with a number of people during the course. I wrote notes asking them about their experience, and many of them said that they'd expected the silence to be much more sober, much weightier, but in fact it was very light. When I went to this Zen garden in Portland, that was a silence where, although there were many sounds because of birds, because of the wind rustling and the foliage, many sounds of the natural world, everything was in real harmony. The visuals with the general the acoustical atmosphere, and I think that the harmonics gave a perception of silence.
What do you think of things like noise-canceling headphones or white noise machines that actually use noise in pursuit of silence?
Well, there's the most extreme version of this is something that I read about called the silence machine, which actually fires a wave that's exactly out of phase with the incoming source of noise and creates a personal silence shadow. I mean, I think the thing is that right now there are many ways in which we can put ourselves in little curated bubbles of silence that are very, very effective. But what I really argue is that we have to think more about our larger public spaces, which in many instances have become really noise dumping grounds. And I think it's got to be rectified on a broader communal scale.
Large public spaces as noise dumping grounds. What do you mean? And there's a lot of New York content in this book, so maybe give us a local example.
Well, I think that anyone who walks around the streets of Midtown or even down here in Soho, you're besieged by so many different kinds of noise, whether it's the strict traffic or construction or people's different sound devices that are leaking. And I heard from the head of cochlear implant surgery at NYU that any time you can hear someone's personal sound device, that person is damaging hair cells. They're causing permanent injury to their hearing. And then, of course, there are the sirens and there are the airplanes. And one reason I think that we right now feel particularly assaulted by noise is because we don't have effective areas of escape. Many cities in the past were noisy. You might have had a home that was near a factory, some kind of industrial source of noise. But what people had as a rule was more acoustical contrast in their cities. They had more places, more vacant lots, more undeveloped areas where they could at least snatch just a little bit of peace. And I think that can go a long way.
We'll get a few phone calls in just a minute. And listeners, in addition to asking your favorite quiet spots to escape from urban noise, how about taking George Prochnick up on his first idea here? Are there different kinds of silence? Do you feel like you've experienced different kinds of silence? If so, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Barry in Brooklyn has some spots. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Places of worship. Great natural built into the city for all types of people.
When services are not taking place.
Yeah, naturally.
I think that's a really good point. And in fact, that places of worship are a key point of refuge for me in Midtown. Not places that share my faith, such as it is, but places that are deserted. I found that particularly, in fact, because right now many of the large churches in New York City do not have very active flocks, you can often get a really extraordinary tranquility inside them.
And coming in on our comments page, people are suggesting, of course, the Cloisters, Valentino Pier in Red Hook, the Great Lawn in Central Park, which I guess depends on how boisterous the softball game is at that moment, on the Hudson right by Battery Park, the Brooklyn-bound platform of the Smith and 9th Street F train station, somebody suggests. I'm not sure why that one. But talking about subways and trains in general, you have a couple of interesting stories about piped-in music. One, you bring up a series of protests at Grand Central Terminal that I didn't know about. Go back to 1950, where they were piping in Muzak.
That's right. Grand Central Station had made an enormous contract with Muzak that brought them lots and lots of money. But within a very short time, there was an uprising on the part of the commuters who made all sorts of appeals to different psychologists, to advertisers themselves, saying that the use of Muzak in this way subverted people's faith in advertising. And they basically all came together and just said no. And the remarkable thing about this story is that they managed by unanimity, in part, to actually get Grand Central to back down, even though they'd made an enormous financial investment.
But when you looked at subways in other cities, Vienna, for example, they pipe in classical music. And you thought that made their systems more kind of civil.
Well, I think we have to bear in mind whenever we're looking at the nature of our acoustical landscape, what some people refer to as the soundscape, is that not all noises are created equal. Some noises can actually, in fact, add to our perception of silence. So, for example, In areas with lots of traffic and manufacturing noise, scientists have found that by bringing in an admixture of natural sounds, whether it's waterfalls or doing plantings that encourage birds to come with birdsong, even if the actual decibel level is elevated, this increases people's perception of quiet.
Roger in Brooklyn. In defense of noise, Roger?
Hello, George. It's Roger Greenewald. How's it doing?
Sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Hi, it's Roger Greenewald. Sorry, it's really annoying.
Oh, Roger, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I'm so pleased with your campaign for science. I mean, you're doing fantastic, and I've heard you all over the place.
Oh, thanks.
But I think, as friends, we've just got to disagree on this one. I think it is noisiness that makes us human. It is irritation that creates the urban character. It is the... it is the stimulus of irritation that makes us strive for better things.
Roger, I'm going to leave it there, but echo you with a comment from our comments page. Jesse writes, why in the world would anybody want to tune out the city? I had the misfortune to live in America, that is outside of New York City, for years, and I cherish every sound I hear in New York City, would never wear earphones. Picking up bits of conversation is intrinsically fascinating and offers the challenge of trying to fill in the unheard portions, writes Jesse on WNYC.org.
Well, can I just say that very much what I write about in my book is being pro all of that panoply of sounds, the rich panoply. What I worry about is something very specific, where you have major noise sources that in fact block over those snatches of conversation, that block over the rich spectrum of sounds which mm-hmm. an urban landscape always is, should be home to. And in fact, I choose to make my life in New York City in part because I also really enjoy that tapestry of noise. What I worry about now, and just quickly addressing Roger's point, mm-hmm. is that I think people are assaulted at this point by so many different noise sources over which they feel no sense of control, that often, coming back to your point about noise cancellation headphones, we put on our earbuds, we turn up our own sound machines, we do different things to block out really our larger environment of sound and therefore turn these over to commercial and to infrastructural noise sources and in fact create something that's not very pleasant for most people.
Daniel in Jersey City taking a noise break right now, he says. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. Where are you?
Right now, I was saying to the screener, I was in near the Caldwell. You know, it's like a little bit of swampland as you go through coming into the city off of 280. I actually live in Pennsylvania, and I commute in every day. But I actually live in a quiet place. Mm-hmm. But I prepare myself mentally for the noise onslaught by stopping here and enjoying watching the hawks fly and, you know, the quietness of that area. Also, without the noise sometimes, it makes you appreciate more, to me, the silence that occurs during snowstorms and the nighttime of the city. I mean, you hear the din of quiet in a snowstorm in New York City, it's a really beautiful. No,
so those are great things. And I just love the fact that you're listening to the radio as you're going to your quiet spot with the hawks. But Daniel, thank you. We have 30 seconds. Last word.
Sure. Well, I certainly think that the contrast is a beautiful thing, and you're right about snowstorms, and it's something that I write about in my book. I think, though, for many people, what you're getting is you're not getting enough contrast. That's exactly my point, that I think we don't, if we really had our life interspersed with more silence, we would be more capable of appreciating the sounds that we are immersed in.
In Pursuit of Silence, Listening for Meaning in a World of Noise. The author is George Prochnik. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, and Alan Smith produced this program. We had intern help today from Sydney Beveridge and Matthew Gurry, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm Brian Lehrer.